Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I told you it would go quickly, right? Very quickly, yes. Thank you for praying for me. I'm doing fine this morning, so I'm very, very grateful. The best we can figure out, it's either like an allergy sinus kind of thing. This is the time of year I was telling them at my condo I moved into a number of years ago that I, around October, November, that I wake up about 5 in the morning with a massive sinus headache. So I figure there's something blooming in my condo complex that does that, and maybe the same thing's blooming here. Or the other option several people suggested was dehydration, and that may be what it was. Makes me feel rather stupid if I brought that misery on myself simply by not drinking enough water for a day or two. I'll get past that, but I'll have a little bit of a challenge that I need to think about that and learn from it if that's what it was, so I don't do that again, but not dwell on it, right? Right. Okay. Oh my goodness. I have had a wonderful weekend with you all. I don't know when I've been with a more attentive group of people that just felt like we're staying connected the whole time with what we're talking about. And I understand now why many of you know Glenda Houghton, but there are a number of you who don't. But she's been here with you before, and why she calls you a wonderful group of women. So thank you for your warm welcome, and it's just been great. And Kathy's been a wonderful hostess to me, and even the additional deal with my just really feeling miserably sick for about 3 or 4 hours yesterday. And I'll tell you, if you ever get sick at a retreat, you want Kathy to be there with you. So I felt encouraged, supported, the neck rub, the drops, I was very well taken care of yesterday. So I'm really grateful for that. And it's wonderful to make new friends this weekend, to see some of you that I haven't seen for a while, and it's just been great. Thank you. Thanks for those of you sharing today, and I heard other people share around the table last night, and it's encouraging. You pray, and I said that to Kathy, not just for me, but for the whole team that works, does a lot of work and a lot of praying for a weekend like this, and then when you are able to share with somebody how God's at work in your life, it encourages us that God, we prayed and God is at work, and so it's a good thing. So, we're talking about joy this morning, right? And again, we keep seeing how all three of these themes tie together, right? The contentment, what we think about, joy. It's all going to overlap and tie together again here. Think about, I want to think for just a minute, when you think about where choosing joy every day, where does our joy come from? Let me talk for a minute about where it does not come from, right? Doesn't come from the world around us. I told you I keep on touch with the news. And I remember for years people have said to me, oh, I don't watch the news anymore, it's too depressing. And I'm like, I just could never get to that place. I have to, even if it's depressing, I have to know what's happening. And I'm not going to walk away from it, but there are times in the last year that I've thought, I think I get that now, you know. It's really depressing what's happening out there in the world. And just, you know, there are always the wars and rumors of wars, right? Syria and Iran and Ukraine and Russia, and now this hyper-Islamic group, ISIS, that's beheading people and videoing it so they can put it out there for the whole world. It's like, there's no joy in watching that. I mean, I'm not watching the videos of the beheading for sure. But just even to hear about that, you're like, what in the, you know. And then all the Ebola stuff that's going on lately. And there's still an airliner that's totally disappeared and nobody knows what has happened to that plane and everybody on it. And the news is just filled with, weather events, the flooding and the tornadoes and the destruction and the death and sexual assaults and kidnappings and shootings. The shooting in Marysville, Washington, about a week and a half ago. My brother is a teacher at that school. And And for somebody who keeps track of the news, I was very happy that my sister-in-law texted me about an hour and a half after the shooting to let me know that he was in lockdown with his classroom and he was okay. So it took him about a week to feel like talking about it. They were having meetings all day long at the school, kind of debriefing, processing, trying to think about how to come back together again after all of that. So, I mean, so many things out there happening that there you don't get joy from being aware of and knowing about or sharing with people in those situations. We don't get joy from... I just feel like and lately that I have so many friends struggling with so many issues. Some of it's health things. Some of it's just other kinds of tragedies and things that happen. And there's not joy in, you know, my friend whose daughter, 4 years old, has the relapse with leukemia. We don't know what's going to happen with that. The prognosis right now does not look good. My neighbor, I came home from class about a week ago, and my neighbor called me in the middle of the day on my cell phone, which she never does, and she's so hysterical, screaming on the other end. I had to get her to calm down to find out she had just gotten out of the shower, got dizzy, passed out, fell, broke her ankle. Turns out broke one bone in three places. And she's screaming in pain, and she's lying on the floor pretty much nude with just a towel around her and can't get to the door. She had, last time she locked herself out, she gave me a key to her place, so I'm the one suddenly calling the paramedics and running over there to meet them with a key so they don't have to break down the door. So, again, just, I mean, we could all sit at our tables and tell those kind of stories, right? Just things going on in people's lives around us that you care about, and that people are hurting and people are suffering. And then just our own personal struggles, right? Jobs, home, families, diets, time management, finances, and we can make a way long list, right, of the things that we struggle with that we don't feel like help us with our joy. I realized I'm quoting Jerry Bridges a lot this weekend. I read a lot of other people besides him, but I do like him a lot, right? He's very biblical and also and very practical. But Jerry Bridges says, if we're honest, most of us must admit that life is often anything but joyful. It often seems that at best life is dull, and at worst it's filled with anxiety, conflict, and tension. So there are all these negative circumstances around us, and there can be all these negative emotions that we deal with a lot of the time. But the exciting news is that we can make choices about joy, right? When is on your sheet there that I have, where I have practical ways that we can choose joy, and number one, choose joy in small and large decisions throughout the day. That let's look at Philippians 4, right? Our book that we're looking at, some of the passages and principles here this weekend. Philippians 4 and verse 4. Okay, Paul says in this verse, Philippians 4, 4, rejoice in the Lord. When?
Always.
I mean, can you even get your mind around that? Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Now, I think that I spent a lot of years as a believer not really understanding that, because my understanding was that joy is an emotion, and I either feel it or I don't. You ever think that way? And it's like, what do you mean he's... Because then when I began to study, it's like the word rejoice is an imperative verb. It's a command. I'm like, how do you command an emotional feeling that's sometimes there and sometimes not? So, I mean, the issue is that, I mean, it can come with joy. I mean, with emotion. Emotion can be a part of it. But it helps us more if we think of joy as a choice that we make of what... because the rejoicing is not, for the most part, in all of the negative circumstances. I mean, there are times that even when the negative circumstances, we were talking about some different things this morning, eventually you see that God's at work. He's bringing good out of this difficulty. I mean, the last time my neighbor broke her ankle about 5 years ago, the other ankle, she lives in the upstairs unit the way I do, so I couldn't take her in, and the doctor said, you can't go home because you live upstairs. My friend, there were two of us believers with two unbelievers in a book club that we were doing together with them, and it was my friend from church who had a home with a downstairs bedroom, and she said, oh, we'll take her in. So my friend, we're praying for her salvation, spends a week living in a home of believers that kept waiting on her hand and foot, coming in and praying over her and loving on her for a whole week. So great sadness that she broke her ankle, but even she looks back and says, you know, God sent you guys to me, you know, God prepared this. But sometimes I think in this lifetime we don't see or know why God's doing what he's doing, and that will not be clear until we get to heaven. I think it's easy for us to sometimes want to say, oh, God allowed this, or God did this because he was doing such and such. I don't think we always know that. We just have to trust him that he's doing what is the right thing to do. And I think we often think that we'll have answers when we get to heaven. And I love what C.S. Lewis said at one point. He said, we've got all these questions we think we're going to walk into heaven and ask God. And he said, I think we're going to, as though you walk into heaven, but he said, I think we're going to walk in and look around and say, of course, that somehow it's all going to be, you know, okay. Okay, so Paul is saying, I don't think he's saying conjure up an emotional feeling. He's saying think about what is true about God, about who he is and what he's done for you. And you can make a choice to be joyful, to rejoice in that truth. Now, most of the time when we make the choice with our minds and with our wills to do that, I think eventually the feeling comes, right? But it may not immediately. but I believe that we're being obedient to what God calls us to do when we are making that choice. God hears this incredibly difficult situation, and it's whether it's, you know, the huge kind of tragedy like that Shannon's already shared about this morning that just impacts everything about your life, or whether it's the day-to-day pebble in your shoe kind of thing, right? A lot of us, it's the pebble in our shoe and we show no joy every day because that pebble's rubbing, you know, whatever small thing it is every day. And then there's everything in between, right? But I think that this is absolutely crucial that we understand that we're not just being commanded to have an emotional feeling, but we're being commanded to make a choice about what we believe and how we think about God and how God's at work in this situation that I'm not maybe real happy about right this second. But think about how that, I mean, that's a way of our expressing to God that we trust him, that we believe that he has everything in control and he will make it all okay in the end. Our great joy is because of who God is and what he's done for us. And what he would have us do is be able to make that choice to rejoice in that, even in whatever. And again, it doesn't mean we're going to be fake, phony, pretend we're not greatly grieved by things that cause great grief and should. That things that grieve the heart of God. But we are showing that we love him and trust him, and we believe that he has everything in his hands. So joy is not so much about an emotional feeling. It's certainly not about personality. I mean, don't you think, I mean, sometimes we tend to think, oh, she's such a joyful person. But we're really talking about somebody's bubbly personality. They just walk in the room and they just bubble over. I mean, you can probably pretty much tell for me that I'm not that kind of personality. I'm much quieter kind of personality. I don't think that probably people who've known me for years, if you said, describe, in knowing Betty really closely for all these years, what would be three words you would give to describe her? I'm pretty sure joy would not be one of those three things. They might eventually get around to expressing something about joy, but they'd probably express it in different terms than that. And maybe you have to ask yourself, if three of your closest friends were asked to give three words that best describe you, would joy be one of them for you? And would it be just a personality issue, or is it really because of a deep trust in God that the joy is there? I had a text from a friend, I think it was Wednesday, that she's a pastor's wife at Grace Community, and she's been taking some classes at the college and has taken all three of my classes now and taken a couple of others. And she's been speaking at women's retreats for a number of years and teaches their huge women's Bible study in their fellowship group. And so we were emailing this week because she was going south from where we live down towards Laguna and Orange County to speak for a church down there, and she knew I was coming up here. So we are praying for each other this weekend. But she said, I think I told, there's this couple in their fellowship group, and she said, I think I told you that David went home to be with the Lord in August. And I just wanted to let you know that Layla's cancer is getting worse. And because they both got diagnosed around about the same time, this couple that had been married for years and years. And she said, Layla's in the hospital now. I think she said because she's having a hard time breathing and she probably doesn't have that much more time. So I got to go visit her before I leave for the weekend. And what struck me, probably partly because I was thinking about this weekend, she said, her second line was, Layla's as joyful as ever. I'm like, wow. And I don't think that meant a bubbly personality, right? It's a woman who's going to be with the Lord maybe in the next few days, maybe in the next couple of weeks. You know, we don't know. And just lost her husband after nursing him to the very end for him. And gosh, I want to be like that, don't you? That you're down at the very end and you can, that somebody would say about you, she's as joyful as ever. And I've met Layla through Donna, and she is a woman with a deep trust in God, and she walks with the Lord and has for a long time, and that's why people can say that about her. Okay, so we make a choice in all kinds of things. We talked some at our table with the discussion questions, and I talked some yesterday about the whole time of worship, whether it would be here, would be in our worship service at our church. And it's clear in my life, it was clear as our table group as we sat around and talked, that most of us, or a lot of us, don't just automatically on Sunday morning just wake up joyful. I mean, maybe sometimes, huh? But sometimes Sunday morning, you know you're going to be with other believers. And you're going to sing. I mean, the point of singing is to do that with joy and worship of God. And like we talked about yesterday, to be thinking about what we're singing about. And that part of what we're thinking about is that we can choose joy in who God is. And we can do that in our Sunday morning worship. And that sometimes it takes starting to prepare on Saturday, right? If you're going to be able to be in the right, a godly frame of mind to go and to worship with other believers and seek to be an encouragement to them. What about our service? I love, you know, what Mandy was sharing. It's like the way that we minister at the church, the way that we exercise our spiritual gifts, the way that we serve, God calls us to do that service with joy. You know, there are even some passages in the Old Testament that talk about that God allowed his people who became so idolatrous and so sinful and so complaining about God to be taken into captivity and be slaves to serve a foreign nation, so that they would see the comparison between what service to a foreign god as opposed to what service to God himself should look like, that it should be done with a glad heart. And probably all of us, if we've been active in terms of trying to serve in some capacity in church ministries, you reach the point where it becomes almost a burden. I mean, it feels sad, you know, embarrassing to even say that, right? But sometimes where it almost becomes drudgery or a burden or just one more busy task on our to-do list. And it's a time for us to stop and think about that, that God is, I mean, I believe he wants us to be faithful, and faithful even when we don't feel like it. That's part of being obedient. But I think he also wants us to be praying about, Lord, the whole reason I'm doing this is because of who you are. And that's probably a good thought about the Mary and Martha. I think they're both great, you know, Mary and Martha. Martha was exercising her spiritual gift, and talks about she was doing that on other days when she was doing hospitality. But the issue on that particular day, I think, was an issue of priorities. It wasn't there was anything wrong with her being a woman of hospitality and a woman of service. That probably, if Jesus came to her home, let's say, on a Sunday, if she was in the kitchen preparing for guests on Saturday, that probably was the godliest thing she could have done. If she was in the kitchen preparing for guests on Monday, that probably was the godliest thing she could have done. But on Sunday, when God in human flesh walks in the front door of your home and sits down in the living room, you do not want to be in the kitchen. Right? So it wasn't that her serving was wrong. It was the sense of priority of when do I exercise my gifts and serve others, and when do I just sit before God and listen to him. And then I can go and do my service to others with a joyful heart and with love, because I'm doing it out of time spent with him and love for him. And I can choose joy in the midst of doing that service, not have it become a burden or just one more task on the list to do. I think, and another time really to choose joy, a very important time, is in trials and struggles, right? In the book of 1 Peter, Peter talks about that God has a purpose in those trials in our lives, and that he is at work to purify us, to purify our faith, to prove our faith genuine, to show. I mean, there are people who claim to be believers, and when the trials hit, they're gone. It's like, this is not meeting my needs anymore. This is not making me feel happy. This is not, I want my life to be a certain way, and God's not making my life the way I want it to be, so I'm gone. And it may be that some of those people come back, but sometimes that's a way that their faith is shown not to be genuine. So the fact that we are continuing to pursue God, continuing to seek to have joy, even in the midst of the trials and the things that are really hurtful in our lives, is a way that God is producing endurance in our lives, a faith that lasts, like we're talking about, for the long haul. That being a believer in Christ, Christianity is not a sprint. It's more like marathon, right? And there are various obstacles along that marathon. Okay, so I think a prayer we would pray might go something like this. Lord, this, whatever it is for every one of us to be doing, this is a really hard thing for me. Help me not to go into a negative mental spiral, but rather help me to rejoice in you in the midst of the hard thing, because I know that honors you, and because it will work in me to become more like Christ. Okay, making a choice. It's interesting to me to think about, too, we all have to make choices in whatever our life situation is. When I talk with the young single gals who are the college students, and they're the thing they struggle with contentment the most is wanting to get married and dreaming of having kids. And I think it's hard for them to picture that you would ever have a day with a child that you've had that you would be discontent. with, you know, it's like, what do you mean? Titus 2 says you have to teach young women to love their husbands. Wouldn't you just have romance 24 hours a day? And what do you mean that you have to teach them to love their children, you know? But I love Amy's honesty that sometimes it's important to have a little break when you're with kids 24. I think you guys know I've been single my whole life. I have a couple, a Jewish gal that I hired her. We were working in a magazine together. She came to know the Lord about a year later, and then about a year, and we moved in together, a little apartment in the Beverly Hills area. Our church was over there. And then in the year after that, we met the guy who became her husband. And they have been family to me for all these years. That I think I lived with them three different times when they moved out of their little apartment in Hollywood and built a house in Agoura. They said, we're going to build it with an extra bedroom so you can come back and live with us again anytime that you want to. And so I did go back and I lived with them for 7 years when their two kids were small. So I got to be the third parent. They even said, if you're going to live with us, and I mean, they're very hands-on parents. I really was not live-in to take care of the kids. But they said, there are going to be times when we're out at our Bible study and you'll put the kids to bed, and so we want you to learn how to discipline them exactly the way we do, which was a very scary thing for me. But made for a great relationship with the kids because they couldn't hold me captive in the corner of the room. So I learned a ton about marriage and I learned a ton about kids. It's not the same as having your own family, your own biological kids, but God taught me a ton. And so then later when those two kids grew up and they had their own kids, now I get to be Grandma B to four. Used to say little ones, now I kind of have to say young ones. They're getting older. But I had the privilege and also the one of the most challenging experiences of my life when the daughter, who she calls me her second mom, she has three kids now, but when she had two little girls ages 2 and 3, the parents, who are my age, the real grandparents, were going to Europe, renting a villa in Italy for a month. How does that sound? And they were like, okay, so we'll take the daughter and the son-in-law and the kids with us. So it was kind of like a free trip to Europe. Well, the mother of these two little girls said, I'm sorry, but if the 2 and 3-year-old go with me, that's not a vacation for me. So I was hearing all this conversation. We were all together at Christmas. And I said, okay, the time period, it was in May, right after school was out at Masters. And I said, the time period is such that I think I could do this. They were living in Washington at that time. And I said, I think I could come and be with the girls for, it was going to be 9 days, before the other two real grandparents came and took over the last 3 or 4 days before they came back. And So I said, just a couple, my deal was, I said, I promise you I will not abuse your children, but I have to be the person in charge. I will not be held captive by your kids. And I knew this because I knew the older one is probably the most strong. You may think you have the strongest 3-year-old on the planet, but you haven't seen strong will until you saw this 3-year-old. And so anyway, it was 9 days. You could do a movie about it, but it was